Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 16th of October 2015. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Tom Williams. And your readers today are Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And Maria Head.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Hospital Rally Cry, Pupils Enjoy Superhero Day, and More Delays to Scheme Review. So can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Michael?
Yes, this is the Hospital Rally Cry. Senior doctors have rallied behind troubled plans for a £150 million emergency hospital near Winchester amid growing concern that the project is running out of time. A critical treatment centre providing 24-hour consultant care at Junction 7 of the M3 was given planning permission last week. But Hampshire Hospitals Trust has made little progress in convincing commissioners who pay for services to back the scheme, despite rising construction costs which could threaten its viability. In an unexpected move which will give fresh impetus to the Trust, four leading practitioners have defended the plans publicly. In a letter in this week's Chronicle, they said, "We have looked in detail at the alternatives and it is clear that continuing to provide our present level of acute services in both Winchester and Basingstoke, it is becoming an increasingly difficult challenge. Although we understand the Commissioner's need to look at the wider financial context of the whole NHS, our work shows that the CTH is not only the most affordable way to provide critical care in our area, it is also the one that will provide the highest quality patient care on all our sites. The project at North Waltham, including an £18.5 million cancer centre, would centralise care for the sickest patients, reshaping Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals as non-emergency units. It would be the second critical treatment hospital in England. West and North Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Groups, that's the CGGS, halted consultation plans last month, warning of a £60 million affordability gap between the hospital shake-up and what they feel they can spend on critical care services. They want a comprehensive review of health across the region, after which they may support the new hospital. But Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, has said the plans cannot wait. She said, "There are two big drivers for us. One, it'll make us the only 24/7 consultant treatment for the sickest, and there's strong evidence that that works. The other big driver for us is that costs are going through the roof. You're at a risk of not being able to do the project because the construction cost becomes so great that the business case doesn't stack up financially. And if that's the case, we're going to have to make other decisions about where we meet the current services for the sickest. We tried to explain these two drivers, but the CGGS have lots of other issues with their other healthcare providers they're trying to square off. The Trust has spent £1.5 million on the project to date. Basingstoke and Dean Borough Councillors backed the planning application by 6-3 last Wednesday, despite protests from parish councils and North Waltham Action Group. In an unrelated development, the Trust expects to increase spending on expensive agency staff at Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals after new immigration rules scuppered plans to hire 98 nurses from the Philippines. The trust had spent an undisclosed sum training the nurses in the Philippines.
Pupils enjoy Superhero Day to mark ambulance campaign. The launch of a life-saving campaign was marked in style in Winchester. Hundreds of children from St Bede Primary School celebrated the launch of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance Schools and Youth Campaign with a Superhero Fun Day. They were given a presentation about the charity and told what they should do in an emergency. Children and teachers also had the chance to see the air ambulance fly in to land at River Park. The new campaign, Be a 999 Hero campaign, will be rolled out to schools and youth groups across Hampshire this autumn. It will provide teachers, parents and children with the necessary tools and knowledge to become a 999 Hero and possibly save a life. At the forefront of the campaign are five superhero characters, inspired by the charity's team of paramedics, doctors and pilots. The characters will be featured on a new website specifically designed for young people so that they can access vital safety information. And there's a very colourful picture with this article of a large group of the children from St Bede's Primary School, with one of the characters, which looks like a helicopter in the background, and some adults dressed up as superheroes.
More delays to scheme review. The lawyer behind a report into Winchester Civic Chief's unlawful handling of the Silver Hill scheme has refused to provide a publication timetable, despite months of delays. Councillor Lloyd Jones, no, I'm sorry, it's Claire Lloyd Jones, had been due to publish her £200,000 review into the controversial development last month. However, she has refused to comment on her investigation 4 months on from its original due date, causing concern among some councillors. Meanwhile, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, leader of Winchester City Council, has dismissed fears that her findings will be kept secret. The report, commissioned 8 months ago in the wake of a High Court ruling that the Council breached European law when it kept the project from commercial tender, was initially due in June before being pushed back to September. It will address the Council's decision-making over several years, including departures from the original development brief, the 2012 compulsory purchase order, and how it was defeated at judicial review. Ms. Lloyd Jones has consistently refused to provide a revised timetable. "I can't tell you anything," she told the Chronicle on Monday. Initially intended to address the immediate build-up to the unlawful decision, the review is now expected to refer to the scheme's broader history. Ms. Lloyd Jones has read documents dating back to the 1990s and interviewed dozens of key players, some on several occasions. Councillor Godfrey said, "The report is likely to change the way we generally do business." He said, "One would like to have the report, but if I start saying, 'Where's the timetable?' Ms. Lloyd Jones would come to me and say, 'I can't give you a timetable,' and no one's better off. We don't want to have to compromise on the integrity of the report." Councillor Godfrey said Ms. Lloyd Jones received quite a lot of additional information in August, including a submission from Silver Hill critic Councillor Kim Gottlieb, which prompted further investigation. Asked whether the report would be made public, Councillor Godfrey added, "I'm not expecting there to be anything in the report which we would not make public. I would certainly expect it to be entirely in the open." Councillor Gottlieb, Conservative member for the Itchen Valley, last year launched the Winchester Deserves Better campaign and said, "I don't think it's keeping anybody awake at night, but councillors would like to see what areas she's covered and what she has to say. And now, after the headlines, we come to the death notices. And these are Alexander, Ivy Joan Alexander, aged 91. Ames, Arnold Ames, suddenly on holiday in Portugal. Barter, Roy Barter, aged 87. Minns, Irene Frances Minns, peacefully after a short illness. Poor, Mary Joy Poor, aged 97. Rowe, Walter Leonard Rowe, aged 85. Tate, Tessa Susan Tate, aged 70 after a long illness. Taylor, Barbara Taylor, aged 90. Trussler, Stan Trussler, aged 88. And Watts, Lois Watts, active member of the U3A and the WI. And we'll go over now to Christian comment, read by I think it was going to be Brian, who is not here, and I've got Christian comment as well. I'm going to pass it over to my because I've read two things.
Christian comment.
Do you mind?
I haven't even had time to read it.
Yes, I'm sorry about that.
Yes. This Christian comment is headed, "What would Jesus have done?" Over the last few days, I have been suffering the most ghastly levels of pain. The pain is in my lower back. I want to tell you that it is a result of an injury sustained scoring the winning try, intrepid mountain rescue team saving someone in peril, abseiling, skiing a black run, husky racing, doing the tough mudder, anything other than the truth. The truth that seems utterly unbelievable. My injury, an injury that resulted in the most pain I've ever experienced in my entire life, was sustained whilst hoovering. I know, I asked myself the same question, what on earth was I doing hoovering in the first place? What adds insult to injury is that I wasn't even really doing the hoovering properly. I was sort of lazily pushing the thing about the living room, completely preoccupied by the silly question, in string theory, what does it mean to say that the point-like points of particles interact with each other in one dimension? I think that was what I was thinking, but like string theory, who really cares? When, as I turned the corner of the coffee table, I felt a pain that resulted in me in lying flat on the floor for 3 hours, unable to get up or to move at all, well, while I was lying on the floor in complete agony and unable to move, in a moment of sorrow, I thought to myself, what would Jesus do? I concluded, he probably wouldn't dial 111... because he wouldn't need to. Neither would he have whinged as proficiently as I do. I did conclude, however, that whilst the idea of Jesus suffering back pain doesn't really seem particularly valid, I do know that in fact Jesus very well knew pain and suffering, and Jesus was killed in the most awful of ways. Crucified that we might see the cross as something that speaks for us in the vicarious atonement it offers, but also against us when we consider the continued pain and suffering of the world. The cross is a constant and powerful reminder that Christians are working for the kingdom of God, which will be perfect, but so evidently not yet. The world for many, despite all modern advances and wealth, is still a place of injustice, hardship, poverty, and neglect. What would Jesus do? We all know the answer. He would give up everything, even his life, in agony and pain, to see each of us having a chance of living in paradise. A gift truly undeserved, but nevertheless on the table. A paradox. A paradox, isn't it? God loving us so much, he would suffer pain and humiliation just so that we might know he loves us. So what should we do? Well, I cannot help but finish with the beautiful benediction from the prayer book. Go forth into the world of peace. Be of good courage. Hold fast to that which is good. Render to no one evil for evil. Strengthen the faint-hearted. Support the weak. Help the afflicted. Honour everyone. And be very, very careful hoovering. Amen. And that Christian comment came from the Reverend Graham Bowkett.
We move on to letters, and I've got to ask you to start again, please, Michael, on the letters.
Letters?
Letters.
Which one would you like?
One of the letters?
I think we better get on with the doctor's concern, don't you, about this hospital business.
Okay.
It's headed, Doctor's Concern. And it starts, Sir, as a senior doctor at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation, as senior doctors, sorry, it comes from several, at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, we feel compelled to express our concern following the Clinical Commissioner's announcement that they had decided to delay public consultation on the proposal for a critical treatment hospital. That's the CTH, which will be referred to later in the letters. We have been closely involved in the plans for the CTH and have been working with health community and public groups, including ambulance services, local GPs and patient groups. Hampshire Hospital's proposal to create a CTH will improve care for the sickest and most complex adults and children, and provide a high level of specialist consultant delivered care. This site, Junction 7 of the M3, will also provide the venue for a state-of-the-art cancer centre funded partially by charity. The creation of these facilities will enable our Winchester and Basingstoke sites to continue to deliver the majority of care locally and improve diagnostic services, outpatients, elective operations, and the care of our elderly patients. These clinical plans are guided by national and international best practice. We have looked at the alternatives, and it is clear that continuing to provide our present level of acute services in both Winchester and Basingstoke is becoming increasingly difficult. Although we understand the Commissioner's need to look at the wider financial context of the whole NHS, our work shows that the CTH is not only the most affordable way to provide critical care, it is also the one that will provide the highest quality patient care on all our sites. We will continue to work with the Commissioners on developing the plans that address the wider financial problems. However, we believe we must stay focused on the providing of high quality, safe and sustainable hospital services to our communities. And this letter is signed Dr. Simon Struthers, who's consultant paediatrician and associate medical director, Jonathan Blanchard, consultant ENT surgeon and AMD, and Richard Harker, who's consultant orthopaedic surgeon and AMP, and Ian McLeod, consultant orthopaedic surgeon and AMD.
And this letter from Rodney Skinner is titled Animal Addle. Sir, having read the letter concerning the unlucky swine, letters October the 8th, I was amused at the term Hampshire Hog Day. The hog is not a pig, but a sheep that is over a year old and had no lambs. Hog comes from the Old English word hogget. It was wool that made this country rich in the Middle Ages, hence the fantastic churches in East Anglia and the Cotswolds sheep country. The Lord Chancellor sits on the woolsack in the House of Lords. Then there are the pubs, the woolsack or wool pack, places where the carriers stopped for rest. Over the years, I have tried to get this through to those who will insist on using the term for pigs. Yes, a male pig can be a hog, but not sheep. Rodney Skinner, Town Close, Ropley.
Rapacious Laws from Doreen Pierce. Sir, the legal system, of which we are so proud, needs tidying and bringing up to date. I'm not speaking of the Crown Court, which deals with serious crime, but of the Magistrates' Court, which deals with minor offences. The system is illogical. A person has no job and nowhere to live. They are hungry, so they steal sandwiches and a can of beer. They are caught, arrested, and summoned before the magistrates. This is where the idiocy begins. They are found guilty and fined £45. Since they have no money, they can't pay. They must also pay court charges. Fortunately, it was a straightforward hearing, so the charges are not high. But if you have no money, all charges are high. Then comes the final insult. The government have recently imposed a court fee of £150 on every case. The magistrates must impose this. They have no choice. This money has nothing to do with the crime or the court. It is simply a way of raising money. Several magistrates across the country disapprove so strongly of this that they have resigned. One felt it was unfair, so he offered the man £40 to help pay his fine. He was immediately removed from the bench and the courtroom because it is illegal for magistrates to help criminals. He was then forced to resign. Although the person has no money, the law is determined to have its due. He must now go to the fines office, where they will explore any money that he has coming in and negotiate a weekly payment from his benefit or wages. If he fails to pay this, he will be summoned again, and this time will go to prison, where he will learn a lot more dishonest tricks. All this taradiddle incurs a lot of expense, wastes people's time, does nothing to deter reoffending. It might be better to go back and find out the man's circumstances and why he stole in the first place. But the law does not reform, only punishes. Doreen Pierce, Old Kennels Close, Oliver's Battery. Can we have the next letter, please, Michael?
Yes, you may have the next letter, if I have one. Yes, tributes to a friend. It comes from Professor Martin Biddle, who we all remember from the Winchester Excavations Committee. Sir, following your tribute to Chris Webb, who died recently, it was reported in the Chronicle of October the 8th, we would like to add our memories of a good friend and archaeological enthusiast. Chris grew up in a household with a profound interest in the past. His parents were members of the Egypt Exploration Society, and Chris accompanied them on a number of visits to Egypt, Central Asia, and Europe as a boy. He served as a member of the Winchester Excavations Committee for many years, and we also, on our management committee, knew him where his enthusiasm and wise comment were greatly appreciated. He was also a staunch supporter of the Friends of Winchester Studies. He was a generous donor, particularly in support of our volume, The Winchester Mint, number 8 in the series of Winchester Studies, published in 2012. A very large book of 725 pages. This catalogues over 5,500 surviving silver pennies minted in Winchester over the five centuries from the reign of King Alfred to that of Henry III. The coins had to be traced down in museums all over the Western world, photographed, described, weighed and tabulated. Although the late Yvonne Harvey, our distinguished author, carried out the work for over 30 years as a volunteer, considerable costs were involved in preparing the volume for the press, and it was here that Chris stepped in, and his name appears near the front of the book on the list of the most distinguished donors who supported the work. And as I said, that came from Professor Martin Biddle of the Winchester Excavations Committee.
Sir, following Councillor Stephen Godfrey's letter about the station area design brief, I confirm that the City Council has been listening and responding to input from the groups he mentions, including the City of Winchester Trust. As a result, a number of changes have been made to the brief, both by way of clarification and to improve what is required of competitors to enhance the regeneration. We are still in negotiation with the Council about other important points, including appointment of an independent RIBA advisor to participate in the competition process, the form of the overall strategy for the area beyond the two council-owned sites, measures for liaison with other landowners and stakeholders, a comprehensive study of traffic, pedestrian, cyclist movement, non-compliance with council car parking policies, importance of a more flexible brief to give greater scope for architectural creativity and development potential, opportunity for arts and cultural facilities. There are practical problems that may be difficult to overcome, but the negotiations are constructive and we hope to achieve agreement to further changes. Keith Lehman, Chairman, City of Winchester Trust.
This letter is headed Air Quality Woes. Sir, with so much in the news at the moment about exhaust emissions, it is a timely reminder of Winchester's chronic air pollution problem. Currently, Winchester City Centre residents lose, on average, 1.75 years of life due to the pollution, almost entirely caused by traffic fumes. And yet, despite this, the City Council is intent on making the problem worse with ill-conceived developments that will generate greater traffic and congestion problems. Air pollution causes thousands of premature deaths across the UK, and planning authorities have a duty to achieve compliance with air quality thresholds that protect our health. Where a proposed development would either make worse an existing breach in levels of air pollution or significantly delay the achievement of compliance, it must be refused. Since Silver Hill will worsen the air quality, the City Council are acting illegally in approving it, says Hazel Agonbar of Egbert Road, Hyde.
This letter is headed Joke Consultation and it's written by Dennis Wellstead from Hook Pit Lane, Farm Lane, Kingsworthy. Sir, Kingsworthy Parish Council was given the task by Winchester City Council to identify sites for 250 new properties by 2031. This was achieved after widespread and thorough public consultation, taking account of the development of 50 sites in Loveton Lane, the preferred site. Top Field was not a preferred site. Yet, by giving outline planning permission to Drew Smith, the City Council has ridden roughshod over local opinion, moved the goalpost by adding another 32 sites. Consultation was a farce, says Dennis Wellstead.
And this letter from John Miller is headed No Need for New City Concert Venue. Sir, I sympathise with Phil Yates' plea for a purpose-built concert hall in the centre of Winchester, letters October the 8th, but we are lucky enough to have a splendid one just outside, up the hill from the city centre. I remember in the early days of the Winchester Festival being tipped off that St Swithin's School was building one and being hugely impressed when I was shown over it. I booked it immediately for the festival. The acoustics are perfect, confirmed by such leading performers as John Lill, Felicity Lott and Tasmin Little, who we presented there to great acclaim. Some people niggled that it was a bit far to come, but it's only a 5-minute drive from the city centre with ample parking and the buses stop outside the school entrance. The Hampshire Singer of the Year competition is held there every year. It's a major asset to the cultural life of Winchester. John Miller, Bishop Sutton, and there is a photograph of St Swithin's School which comes with this letter.
And the last letter is entitled Good Location and comes from Anne Gildersleeve. Sir, I've been meaning to write in support of Richard Evans' letter, The Chronicle, September the 17th. I entirely agree that River Park is an excellent venue which is always busy and accessible for people living all around Winchester. It's an easy cycle ride from St Cross and, as Richard says, being near the centre of Winchester, after a lovely swim or yoga class, one can always pick up some shopping on the way home. For me, and I am sure for many others, Bar End is further to cycle, and I would probably end up driving there. So I disagree with Catherine Morris's letter in the Chronicle of October the 1st, when she says the location is much easier to access. The majority of people in Winchester do not need an Olympic-sized pool. Anne Gildersleeve, Cripstead Lane, St Cross. And, after all the letters. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle, or one word, .co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we come to the historical items, starting with 200 years ago, please, Michael.
200 years ago, October the 16th, 1815. Early in the last month, a profligate and dissipated fellow living at Queensborough in Kent deserted his wife and family, leaving them chargeable to that parish. He was soon apprehended and brought before T.Q. Greet, Esquire, mayor of that town, who sentenced him to 3 months' imprisonment and to be flogged at 3 different times in the open marketplace and on market days. But no one in the town would undertake the office of flagellator. The spirited and worthy mayor determined the fellow should not escape, attended at the place, and at the time appointed threw off his coat, and with a dexterity that could not be excelled, bestowed on him the punishment his conduct had so justly merited. The next bit is also 200 years ago, and it's called Steep Bet. On Tuesday morning last, T. Poole, Esquire of Hodsshrove, undertook for a wager of 50 guineas to ride down the steepest part of the Devil's Dyke near Brighton, on horseback, a descent at least of 300 yards, and in many places almost vertical. He rode an aged mare of his own, who rapidly executed her task, galloping with her forefeet and sliding upon her hocks, no less to the astonishment than gratification of all present.
And there are two items from 100 years ago, October the 16th, 1915. MP on front line. The inhabitants of Winchester will be pleased to hear that the gallant gentleman who represents the city so well in Parliament, better known as Major the Honourable Guy Baring, was safe and well as recently as October the 6th. Now he is at the front with the Guards Division, defending the national freedom and those high patriotic ideals which he always held so dear in times of peace. And we are confident there is not a Wintonian who will not wish him a safe and speedy return. It is now nearly 2 months since the Guards Division left England, and they have now got sufficiently near the front to have been in reserve with the recent great attack when the recent great attack was made. And the second item is titled Plane Crash. There was an alarming aeroplane accident in Winchester on Thursday afternoon, but fortunately it resulted, as believed, in no serious personal injury. Second Lieutenant T.N.B. Newton of the Berkshire Regiment, attached to the Royal Flying Corps, came down from Farnborough to lunch with his father, Mr. T.E. Newton of Maundale, Berwick's Road. He started to return about 2:40, ascending from Week Down. He was turning to get the benefit of the wind when the machine sideslipped and nosedived to the ground from a height of about 400 feet. Lieutenant Newton, who was strapped in his seat, received no worse hurt than a bad shaking.
Good Lord. Mm. Now we have 50 years ago, October the 16th, 1965. Bobby's on the beat. A six-point plan to keep policemen more usefully employed, which may eventually cost £90,000 a year, was unanimously approved by Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Authority at Winchester on Monday. Members have been told by the Chief Constable, "We are desperately short of manpower on the street. This is a major problem. How to get every policeman doing the maximum amount of time out on the street?" The Chief Constable successfully recommended the immediate addition of 8 clerical staff, 3 messengers, 7 telephonists, and 7 civilian drivers. And the second item is headed redundancy pay. The Winchester Employment Exchange is to have a big new role to play in the administration of the National Redundancy Payment Scheme, which the Minister of Labour has announced will start on December the 6th. Full details of the scheme are given in a free 32-page booklet, which is being sent to employers, trade unions, and other interested organisations. The main points of the scheme are that employers will be liable to make payment to employees with at least 2 years' service who become redundant and satisfy certain conditions. Employers will be able to reclaim, via the employment exchange, the major part of any redundancy payments they are required to make.
25 years ago brings us up to 1990, and it's October the 12th, and it's headed Illegal Development. The Secretary of State for Transport did not comply with European law over the M3 extension issue, it was claimed, as a High Court challenge began in London this week. The hearing, expected to last 3 days, is the latest development in the 19-year battle over the motorway link between Bar End and Compton. Twyford Parish Council, Compton and Shawford Parish Council, and 3 individual applicants are attempting to overturn the Department of Transport's decision to cut through Twyford Down and widen the M3 to a 4-lane carriageway. The next entry is titled rather cunningly, Residents Unchuffed. Noise and pollution from the Watercress line was discussed by Oresford Parish Council this week. A letter having been received from a resident complaining about the noise, the emission of soot from the engines, and the late and early running of trains. The clerk had spoken to the managing director of the railway company, who had assured her that he was keen to deal responsibly and pleasantly with all members of the public, and agreed to look into the complaints. Mr. Paul Waterworth, a councillor who lives near the railway line, said there had been a lot of tooting throughout the year.
I'm now going to read Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. There are three items, and the first is entitled Captain's Great Example. Brian Draper from Winchester works at the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity. He is also a contributor to Thought for the Day on BBC Radio 4's Today programme, and highlighted the actions of Stephen Davis, the Saints footballer who captained Northern Ireland to victory last week over Greece, securing qualification for Euro 2016. Speaking on Friday, Mr. Draper told how his 11-year-old son was recently walking home in his football kit with friends after an after-school match. They spotted Davis on the driveway of his full-flood home. "He is one of my son's heroes. The pro hailed the lads over, took the time to ask how they'd got on, and kindly encouraged them. My son didn't so much walk through the front door as float in on air." Mr. Draper added, "Football's intrinsic goodness, by its very nature, endures. Teamship, artistry, camaraderie, community, and occasionally still that triumphal joy of the underdog. It's a spiritual principle, surely, that in a world of corruption, the incorruptible will ultimately outlast and outshine all else. The exploits of the likes of Northern Ireland team will be treasured not just by communities in Belfast for generations to come, but stored up as well, for good, in an English schoolboy's heart. Great stuff." And the second item is cobbled nonsense. As Belgarum often has to remind the world, Winchester is not full of cobbled streets. Many PR people and national journalists succumb to stereotype and imagine the city to offer more tweeness than it does. The latest culprit is estate agent Savills, which recently urged tourists to take to the cobbled streets and explore the city's shopping scene. Belgarum is not aware of a single such street in Winchester, unless one counts the approach to the Great Hall, where the shopping scene is mostly limited to King Alfred keyrings in the adjoining shop. Savile's error seems all the more surprising for the fact the firm appears to have counted the steps to the top of Winchester Cathedral's tower. They are 213, if you're interested. Do you know of a cobbled street in Winchester? Perhaps there was a time when the streets were cobbled with stones, or has it always been paving stones and tarmac? Suggestions are welcome, on postcards or otherwise, to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And finally, Freemasons' annual service. There was a time, not so long ago, when Freemasons preferred privacy to publicity. But times are changing, and Winchester Freemasons have sent out a press release about their annual service for Masons and their families, which attracted a congregation of more than 500 to Winchester Cathedral on Sunday. The service, which was led by the Dean, the Very Reverend James Atwell, saw the provincial Grand Master of the province of Hampshire and Isle of Wight, Michael Wilkes, greet the deputy lieutenants of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. They in turn were accompanied by 12 mayors from across the province and the chief executive of 4 charities supported by the province, including the Hampshire Air Ambulance, Rowan's Hospice, the Trelawa Trust and the Macular Society. The service was preceded by a reception at which the PGM explained a little about Freemasonry. They are also opening their Winchester base on Alsford Road on Sunday, October the 25th. Now we have editorial comment from Michael and first person from Maria, please.
Well, the editorial comment is on the great subject of the development of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and which way it should go. Senior figures of the Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust have come out fighting to rescue their long-held plans for a new hospital between Winchester and Basingstoke. This week, we publish a letter from four consultants championing the proposal and the report, and to report the Trust's Chief Executive Mary Edwards' support for the scheme, jeopardised by the Clinical Commissioning Group's stance that it is too expensive. Now more than ever, there needs to be a public debate about the future of the NHS locally. The Chronicle called for one 2 weeks ago, and we repeat that now. The managers must be fully open on what the plans would mean for the Royal Hampshire County Hospital.
And first person this week is headed Protect Us from the Dark Forces. The three greatest mysteries of the universe will always be for me the Egyptian pyramids, parallel parking, and this council's vision for Silver Hill. It's been nearly a year since the centre of the city was brought to a standstill by thousands of people protesting at their banal, boring and bonkers plans. It's been 8 months since the High Court judged our council leaders had acted outside the law by offering the contract for the much-needed redevelopment to the global real estate conglomerate TH Real Estate. It's been roughly 6 months since Save English Heritage produced alternative plans working with local architects sensitive to the historic town centre and public services. And it's been nearly a month since the Information Commissioner ordered the council to make public the financial data it received from TH about its forecast on profits from rentals on shops and flats. Henderson, you may remember, if you have a degree in quantum physics, dropped affordable housing and a bus station, claiming costs had become too high. Residents like Judith Martin smelt a rat. Anyone on a normal wage trying to get on the property ladder here will tell you their aspirations often sink faster than an English rugby team because the value of property rises faster than a whippet on steroids. Yet property-rich Henderson claimed they were strapped. Perhaps they went to the Sepp Blatter School of Accountancy and Transparency. But there's not been a day when the Winchester Deserves Better campaign has not been battling on behalf of common sense and public opinion. The two main questions people ask about Silver Hill is why did Winchester ever get the Brooks and other hideous monstrosities in the first place? And why has the whole process of regeneration taken so long to get nowhere? All answers lead back to this council and a generation of senior officers who lack the vision, moral courage, and basic skill set needed to save Winchester from itself, namely its power of attraction, a beautiful place to live in a time of massive population growth and unsettling change, within easy commutable distance from the world's most expensive city. But their vision is of a city that can compete with Basingstoke. Doh! So Henderson's seven-storey buildings and 90s-style shopping centre give them what they want, while shareholders look forward to a feeding frenzy from high rents. Meanwhile, what do we see happening? An iconic English high street, the oldest in Europe, pockmarked with empty shops. Only estate agents, banks and chain restaurants seem to pay the preposterous rents. Even on Parchment Street, independents are folding. Yet it's not a lack of shoppers nor entrepreneurial spirit. Look at how vibrant the town is on Farmers Market Day. It's almost impossible to meander down the lower high street when it's full of temporary stalls. and you are either looking forward or completely dreading the pre-Christmas invasion of wooden sheds around Cathedral Close. "We don't want Winchester to become like every other town centre," residents cry. If the council kept rates lower for small retailers, prioritised a permanent and outdoor market, and championed independent shops, then a characterful and grassroots regeneration would unfold. Much that is left of historic Winchester lies beneath Silver Hill. Roman and medieval remains, plus underground waterways. If this was Bath or York, these would be open to enhance the city's uniqueness. The council has a respected archaeology department, but it is worryingly small. We need a Boris, a local MP who cares about heritage enough to intervene on behalf of the nation. Why this council is still courting a plan that would destroy local retailers and trash our heritage is less mysterious than heartbreaking.
And now we have some items for what's on. Not very much this week, but here we are. On Friday the 30th of October, at the Discovery Centre, award-winning singer Robert Habermann will be telling the story of Frank Sinatra, singing his classic songs along the way. It's called His Way, the Frank Sinatra Story. And if you'd like to go to that, it says here at 8 p.m, but I believe in other way, in place in the paper it said 7:30. The Discovery Centre's number, at which you can check that, is 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603, and the tickets cost £10. This Monday, and every third Monday of the month, in the Undercroft, Inner Close, Winchester Cathedral, there is Tea at Three, a cream tea and get-together for older people. All older people are welcome at 3 p.m, and the cream tea and the chat costs £2.50. And finally, what was actually a little notice in the paper, but I'm putting it into what's on, mulled wine and carol singing will be on offer when Christmas lights are switched on at a Winchester monument next month. The Christmas tree at Kingsgate Arch will be lit at 6 p.m. on Thursday, November the 26th. The nearby Wickham Arms is providing mulled wine, and St Swithin's Church above the Kingsgate will remain open. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 16th of October, at 7:30 a.m. and begins again at 6:11 p.m. On Wednesday the 21st of October, it ends at 7:38 a.m. and begins at 6:01 p.m. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news, and we'll go over to Michael, please, for the first one.
Well, the picture accompanying this piece says it all. It shows scaffolding, a tower of it, leaning dangerously over, toppling in our high street. And it's entitled Shop Scaffold Collapse Probe. An investigation is continuing into how a 30-foot scaffold collapsed in Winchester High Street. Both the Health and Safety Executive, HSE, and Hampshire County Council Highways team are pursuing the scaffold company at the centre of the collapse. As reported in the Chronicle, market traders scrambled to move their cars before the metal structure fell yards from where they were setting up their stalls on Sunday, October the 4th. Witnesses say three contractors who were cleaning gutters at the clothes shop Monsoon attempted to move it from one side of the shop to the other without dismantling it. The initial topple was halted by a street sign, which gave other traders time to get out of the way. Just minutes later, the tower crashed down. No one was hurt. However, the incident occurred less than 2 hours before the popular harvest festival at Winchester Cathedral, when the street would have been crowded. A spokesman for the HSE told the Chronicle on Monday, "HSE is aware of the incident and inquiries are ongoing." Executive Member for the Economy, Transport and Environment at Hampshire County Council, Sean Woodward, said, "We have a robust licensing scheme in place to ensure the safety of everyone using the public highway, and we'll be pursuing the scaffold company involved for unauthorised and unsafe activity. We've also been in contact with the construction team at HSE, and the scaffolding company have a duty to report the incident to them as well," Councillor Woodward said. Busker Robert Berry watched the incident at around 8 a.m. He said, "The two guys, they were just hanging on to it for dear life, and it was just propped up against the post. Everyone was shouting and screaming, 'Move your cars!' All the traders had to quickly jump into their cars and get them out of the way. There was another chap trying to keep people from walking under it. It was a right old scene." Jonathan Walker, a market trader from Kingsworthy, said, "I heard a big crashing sound and people shouting. Then I saw it topple. It hit a post on the way down, which broke its fall. If that wasn't there, it could have landed on some cars nearby. It wasn't fixed to the wall, wasn't secured, and I think they shouldn't have moved it without dismantling it." Monsoon did not comment on the incident, but said they were investigating how it occurred. After the incident, there were calls for full investigation and action against the scaffolders. Winchester City Councillor Ian Tate, whose ward includes the High Street, said the council should launch an investigation. "It's a disgrace that it happened, and scaffolding safety is something I have raised so many times. It was lucky that no one was hurt, but if someone was hurt, somebody would have to be held responsible." In 2006, a worker broke his collarbone when he fell from scaffolding in Winchester High Street. Statistics from the National Association of Access and Scaffolding Contractors revealed that while there were no fatal accidents within their membership, accidents increased by 9% from 2013 to 2014, from 96 to 105.
Exciting find in River Hamble. Wreck could be the warship Holy Ghost used by Henry V in famous campaign against the French that included Battle of Agincourt in 1415. An historic shipwreck found in the mud of a Hampshire river may have been a great ship used by Henry V to wage war on the French. After the king's famous victory at Agincourt in 1415, experts believe the wreck found in the River Hamble near Lower Swanwick could be a 600-year-old vessel used by him in the conflict against France. Work to protect the wreck is now set to take place, and it is hoped research could shed light on how medieval vessels were operated in the way the Mary Rose has done for Tudor ships. Historian Dr. Ian Friel, who first spotted the wreck in an aerial photograph, believes it is the Holy Ghost, one of four great ships built for Henry V's fleet. The area of the river where it was found has been described as a medieval breaker's yard, and is close to where the king's flagship, the Grace Dieu, was found in the 1930s. The Holy Ghost was an important part of Henry V's fleet as he continued the conflict known as the Hundred Years' War in the early 1400s. It was also the home of his navy as he fought the war against France on land and sea. And the Holy Ghost took part in two of the most important naval battles of the conflict, serving as the flagship of the Duke of Bedford at the Battle of Harfleur in 1416, and also being involved in fighting off the Chede de Caux in 1417. The ship, whose name comes from Henry's personal devotion to the Holy Trinity, was originally rebuilt from a Spanish vessel called the Santa Clara that was captured in the late 1413 or early 1414 and then acquired by the English Crown. After Dr. Friel's discovery, Government Heritage Agency, Historic England, has taken steps to protect and investigate the wreck. Future scientific research on the ship, which could include sonar and aerial imaging using drones, could reveal much about 15th century shipbuilding and improve understanding of life aboard ship, naval warfare of the time, dock building and docking practices. Duncan Wilson, Historic England Chief Executive, said, "The Battle of Agincourt is one of those historical events that has acquired huge national significance. To investigate a ship from this period, close to the 600th anniversary, is immensely exciting. It holds the possibility of fascinating revelations in the months and years to come." Dr. Friel said, "I am utterly delighted that Historic England is assessing the site for protection and undertaking further study. In my opinion, further research leading to the rediscovery of the Holy Ghost would be even more important than the identification of the Grace Dieu in the 1930s. The Holy Ghost fought in two of the most significant naval battles of the Hundred Years' War, battles that opened the way for the English conquest of northern France. That success was short-lived. Henry V died in 1422 and was succeeded by his infant son, Henry VI, the last King of England to be born in Winchester. And there is a photo of the site at the Hamble where the Holy Ghost may be lying, and also an artist's impression of the ship."
Celebration of Alfred. Hyde 900 King Alfred Weekend celebrates the great king's life later this month. The weekend starts in St Bartholomew's Church on Thursday, October the 22nd, with a lecture by Winchester's senior judge, Keith Cutler. The Recorder of Winchester will explore milestones of our legal system by looking at its foundation with Alfred the Great and development up to Magna Carta and beyond. The weekend continues on Friday with the story of Hyde Abbey Garden, told by its creator, Kim Wilkie, at 2 p.m, a rare opportunity to hear the renowned landscape architect talk about his work in situ. Then, from 6:45 p.m, with drinks in St Bartholomew Church, there will be a commemoration of the events of 100 years ago during the First World War, following the lives of those who left Hyde never to return, Hyde Soldiers 1915. There will also be an exhibition in the church to tell the story of Hyde and its people in the 1914-18 war, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday and on Sunday. On Saturday, from 10:30 a.m. in Hyde Parish Hall, there will be an exhibition entitled Finding the Stones, Bringing Hyde Abbey Back to Life. At 3 p.m. you can hear a presentation from Hyde 900 and interested parties to the Hyde Abbey King Alfred Project. Finally, at 7:30 p.m. in St Bartholomew's Church, you can hear the Hyde 900 Choir singing a programme of music and song to celebrate King Alfred's life and legacy. The annual King Alfred's Day service will take place in St Bartholomew's Church at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday, October the 25th. At 3 p.m. in the Darch Room, Hyde Parish Hall, a Sunday afternoon of session of poetry with Hyde in mind will be led by well-known local poet Hugh Greasley. All will be followed by a nice cup of tea. And that's Thursday, October the 22nd to the next Sunday.
This next piece is headed by a rather gorgeous photograph of Alan Titchmarsh wearing his purple Chancellor's robes after having been welcomed to the university. And it's headed, Gardening God is New Chancellor. Winchester University has officially welcomed Alan Titchmarsh as its new Chancellor at a ceremony last Wednesday. Joy Carter, University Vice-Chancellor, said, "We are honoured and delighted to welcome Alan as our new Chancellor. Alan is joining us at an exciting time of growth and change. We have a firm foundation from which to build the future." Professor Carter added, "His values and beliefs are closely aligned to those of the university. Intellectual freedom, social justice, diversity, spirituality, individuals matter, and creativity. I look forward to working with him in the coming years." Mr. Titchmarsh began his gardening career as an apprentice at the age of 15 before moving into print and broadcast journalism. He's a TV presenter and writer, contributing to newspapers and magazines, and has written 9 novels, 3 volumes of autobiography, and more than 50 gardening books. Mr. Titchmarsh was appointed an MBE for services to horticulture and broadcasting in 2000, and 4 years later was awarded the RHS's highest accolade, the Victoria Medal of Honour. His own charity, Gardens for Schools, merged with the Royal Horticultural Society's Campaign for School Gardening 10 years ago and has made over 500 grants to primary schools for the creation of gardens and wildlife areas. Mr. Titchmarsh succeeds Dame Mary Fagan, the former Lord Lieutenant, who retired earlier this year after nearly 10 years' service to the university.
Tribute to walkers. Hampshire civic chiefs have paid tribute to a team of wounded ex-servicemen walking 1,000 miles for charity. The councillors gathered at Winchester's Great Hall to recognise the 6 servicemen and women on a 72-day expedition throughout mainland UK. Walking with the wounded is made up of 4 British and 2 US service personnel who began their odyssey on August the 22nd in Scotland before finishing at Buckingham Palace next month. The charity supports veterans with physical, mental or social injuries to develop new careers outside the military and provide long-term security for themselves and their families. The team visited the Rifles Museum at Peninsula Barracks before County Council leader Roy Perry welcomed them at the Great Hall. Councillor Perry presented a cheque for £5,000 to the Walking with the Wounded charity. He said, "We are delighted to have been able to welcome the team from Walking with the Wounded to Winchester and pay tribute to their remarkable efforts. There are over 30,000 military personnel based in Hampshire, the largest contingent in the country, and we place enormous value on our long and close relationship with the forces. Through the military covenant, around 1.7 million in grants has been secured to date for dozens of projects across the county, which benefits the forces, their families, and the wider local community." Edward Parker, Chief Executive and co-founder of the charity, said, the Walking with the Wounded Walk of Britain team is very grateful for the support we have been given by Hampshire County Council. The Walk of Britain completes day 48 in Winchester, with a further 320 miles to go until we complete our 1,000-mile endeavour in London on November the 1st. And there is a photograph of the servicemen and some of the civic leaders standing in the Great Hall with a giant cheque.
People priced out of rural property. This is an article by Chris Yendall. They are known as PORES, a large group of people who are being priced out of rural England by high property values. With homes in the countryside costing at least 8 times the average salary, often as a result of cottages being snapped up by wealthy outsiders, first-time buyers are frequently forced to leave the communities they grew up in. Campaigners claim the resulting exodus is creating pensioner pockets in villages with an ever-increasing shortage of young people. One Hampshire parish is trying to ease the chronic shortage of properties available to couples keen to remain in rural idylls. Shared ownership houses being built in Ampfield are for locals only. Anyone wishing to occupy one of the properties must either live in the parish or have a strong local connection. The much-needed new houses provided by Hyde New Homes will help a fortunate few continue to live and work in the local community. Under the scheme, occupiers arrange a mortgage on part of the property's full market value and pay a subsidised rent on the rest. Monthly mortgage and rent payments are often less than the cost of buying outright. Those wishing to move after a few years can use their share of the profit from the sale to purchase another property. Ampfield resident Martin Hatley, deputy leader of Test Valley Borough Council, said, "The vast majority of people have been very supportive. In many villages there's a missing age group. People leave at 18 or 19, often to go to university, and can't afford to return until they're in their late 30s or early 40s. The problem is not confined to Hampshire. House values in rural areas across the UK are 11 times the national average, which means many people could only afford to buy their own home if their salary soared by a staggering 150%. One of the organisations determined to help people priced out of rural England is the National Housing Federation. Chief Executive David Orr said, "We know how difficult many under 40s are finding it to afford a home in towns and cities, but it's becoming impossible for people to put down roots in our villages and market towns. These worsening problems would be solved if more affordable homes were built."
The title of this one, Homes Project Beset by Snags. The 2,000-home Barton Farm scheme in Winchester is suffering a series of hitches. The bumps in the road include some of the construction being delayed due to an ongoing dispute about land value between Cowler Homes and Winchester College. The Chronicle reported in August how the college and Cowler are in arbitration over the final price of the land. In another twist, it has been revealed that residents may have to pay for a water management scheme. Winchester City Council also failed to answer questions on whether new government legislation on affordable homes to buy could change the scheme. The Barton Farm Forum heard Councillor Eileen Berry raise the question of the land dispute. She said, "There are rumours that Winchester College want more money for their land. Is that the truth?" However, Cowler remained tight-lipped and his representative said they can't comment on commercially sensitive information. The forum last Wednesday also saw councillors raise concern that residents may have to cough up money to pay for a sustainable drainage strategy, SUDS. SUDS was set up to be managed and maintained by Hampshire County Council. However, the government changed legislation, which caused the County Council to pull the plug, and Winchester City Council will not manage SUDS either. A City Council report said the cost to residents may not be significant, as residents can claim a no surface water discount from Southern Water, but said the problem was not ideal and could rumble on for years. Councillor Barry Lipscombe criticised the present situation. "I'm very unhappy with the concept of this development, having uncertainty on what they will be charged. I hope we can solve this before we see houses up for sale. We need to take a more robust attitude and get this sorted out. It can't be put on the rest, and it can't be put on to the residents." Council officers also refused to answer questions on government policy change, which was outlined by David Cameron. The Prime Minister promised to sweep away rules that require developers to build homes for rent in a bid to increase the building of homes for first-time buyers. Corporate Director Steve Tilbury said, "There is no proposal to change the level of affordable housing at Barton Farm. But if the government has a policy change, then it changes and it can have an effect on it. We simply do not know. It is hoped that the first homes on the Barton Farm estate will be occupied by March 2018.
Nurse admits to fatal mistake. A nurse who worked for an agency while signed off sick has admitted causing the death of a terminally ill Chandler's Ford patient. Kadiatu Harris accepted failing to properly check the ventilator during a night shift at the home of 39-year-old Matthew Simmons. Harris had been suspended from her job at Poole Hospital NHS Foundation Trust for a series of drug administration blunders. She was later signed off sick, but began working for Wimborne Nursing Agency at Salisbury, Yeovil, Romsey, Wimborne Victoria and Dorchester County Hospitals in June and July 2011. She also agreed to provide care for Mr. Simmons, who was dying from von Hippel-Lindau syndrome at his home in Oakmont Road, Chandler's Ford. Mr. Simmons died on July the 6th, 2011, as his ventilator was disengaged. Harris originally denied causing his death, but has now admitted the allegation before a panel of nursing and midwifery council in London. The NMC heard from Harris's colleague at Poole Hospital, Mariana Reggie, who said that Harris had asked her to cover her on a number of occasions. She said, "Caddy would ask me to keep an eye on her patient if she went to the toilet or needed to change equipment for a patient. It was usually only between 2 to 3 minutes, no longer than 5 minutes. I don't remember it being for a longer period of time. There was a system in place where we would look after each other's patients when we needed to, but I couldn't always leave my patient, but I never saw her leave the bedside unattended." Harris admits 3 allegations of incorrectly administering medication, 1 allegation of failing to check a patient's infusion line, and 13 allegations of working agency shifts while signed off sick. She admits failing to ensure Mr. Simmons' ventilator equipment had been correctly changed during handover, and failing to ensure it was functioning correctly, and that her failures caused the death of the patient. She denies deliberately lowering the volume of another patient's vital signs monitor at Poole Hospital, failing to inform her colleagues and failing to hand over to another nurse properly. An inquest last year heard how Mr. Simmons had been discharged from Southampton General Hospital on July the 6th, 2011, to spend the remainder of his life at home, but died just hours later after one of the ventilators had not been switched on by either of the agency nurses contracted to caring for him. In a report into the incident, Dr. Dominic Bell, intensive care consultant at Leeds General Infirmary, said the evidence indicated identifiable shortfalls in the agencies. The GMC hearing was continuing this week, and there is a photograph of Matthew Simmons with this article.
Charity to teach adults how to read. A new charity has been set up in Winchester to help adults learn to read. Read Easy Winchester launched with its first coach training day at the Discovery Centre in Jury Street. The City Council and the Discovery Centre have generously supported the set-up of the charity. Winchester Town Forum, the body of 18 city councillors that represents city wards, approved a grant of £500 that covered start-up costs. There was cross-party support at the recent launch, with Councillors Stephen Godfrey, Council Leader Conservative, Jamie Scott, Liberal Democrat, and Janet Berry, Labour, attending the launch. They enjoyed tea and cake with the founder of the national charity, Ginny Williams-Ellis, and coaches. The charity aims to help tackle the often hidden problem that sees one in 20 adults having the reading age of a five-year-old. Read Easy Winchester is a voluntary group which offers free one-to-one coaching to adults. The coaching is confidential at an approved venue. Research by the charity shows that people benefit not just through improved reading skills, but via boosted self-confidence and self-esteem.
Prisoner dies. A fifth inmate has died at Winchester Prison in 3 months. The jail's spate of deaths continued on Monday after what is believed to be a medical incident. The Ministry of Justice declined to identify the deceased or release more details before next of kin were informed. Staff have said morale has reached an all-time low after the deaths of Hayden Burton, Daryl Hargrave, Jason Payne and Mohammed Emani Marufushani since mid-July. A source told the Chronicle last month there is them and us situation between staff and senior management.
Students redesign unwanted clothing into wearable garments in just 6 hours. Waste is transformed. Take 1 ton of second-hand clothes, then add a score of creative teenagers and see what you get in 6 hours. The Great Waste Redesign Challenge at Winchester School of Art hosted a one-day fashion design boot camp for teams from local schools and colleges. The students had only a few hours to design and then make new garments out of discarded clothes supplied by the People's Dispensary for Sick Animals. The competition attracted entries from Peter Simmons, Alton and Eastleigh Colleges and King's School. It was the youngest entrance, Year 9 pupils from King's, who emerged triumphant after the judging by the Mayor Angela Clear. The event was a precursor for the Great Waste Redesign Challenge, open until March 2016, which invites people from across the Winchester district to come up with a design to make something useful from waste. And it must be one that other people can recreate. There are categories for designs for a new garment, a textile, and an item that can be used at home, in the garden, or at work. The judges will look for instructions that are easy to follow to create a beautiful object that is useful and does its job well. Something that will inspire people to look at stuff they throw out with new eyes. Winchester Fashion Week in April 2016 will include an exhibition of the shortlisted entries, with the winning outfits modelled as part of the glamorous annual catwalk show. And there are two pictures with this article. one of the winning team from Year 9 at King's School with a very glamorous creation that you might wear to an evening do. And also a picture of Mayor Angela Clear judging the creations.
Police issue warning of poachers after chase. Police have issued a warning after chasing suspected poachers in the Winchester area. Officers spotted a group of suspected poachers in the area of the A31 near Alsford after midnight last Saturday. They followed the vehicle, a green Nissan 4x4, to the A272 road and then on to Wheely Down Road before losing sight of it. Police spokesman said, "In light of increased incidents of poaching activity across Hampshire, please be vigilant and ensure all reasonable measures are taken to secure land. If any activity is seen and ongoing at the time, please report it to Hampshire Police via 999, the spokesman added.
First place in competition for pitch perfect singers. There's a photograph of young people here, boys, young men and young women. And it's a Hampshire-based choir, and they've won a prestigious music competition in London. It's called the Sansara Choir, comprising former boy and girl choristers from Winchester Cathedral and College, and they've won the 2015 London International A Cappella Choir competition hosted by Peter Phillips and the Talis Scholars at St John Smith Square. Beating 15 other choirs from around the world, they not only impressed the international jury, but also gained the audience prize in recognition of their imaginative programming. Money from these awards will go some way towards Sansara's ambition to produce a professional recording of their chosen repertoire, including music by Winchester-based composers. The win has delighted Tim Lowden, who attended the first concert the choir performed at Northington Church near Alsford. Mr. Lowden of Stockbridge Music SM was so impressed by their sound and standard of performance that he booked them to perform in Stockbridge last year. He has never before heard a choir made up of young choral scholars, all under 22 years old, producing such a fresh sound, expertly controlled and moulded into an ensemble of real quality. Stockbridge Music agreed to make a small donation towards the costs of the choir making their first recording to enable them to promote themselves.
Fracking demo. Environmental activists protested outside a Winchester bank over its links to a fracking company. Winchester Friends of the Earth and the city's Green Party waved placards condemning Barclays for supporting shale gas drilling through its Third Energy subsidiary. Campaigners fear the go-ahead in Yorkshire, where Third Energy is pushing for permission to drill, could set a precedent for the controversial methods to start in Hampshire. The demo on Saturday, part of a national campaign, gathered signatures for a petition and encouraged Barclays customers to write letters of objection. Party activist Jo Holland said the demo was very positive. She said, "We're concerned that once this energy production is accepted in one place, then it kind of makes it acceptable everywhere else. Some people just don't want to know, no matter what. That's fine, but lots of people were very interested and they didn't know that this was the case. Third Energy is at the forefront of efforts to bring fracking to the UK, but has not sought permission to drill in Hampshire. However, licences have been granted for several local sites, including land around Kingsworthy and east of Winchester between Chilcombe and Beauworth. Both licences are held by Sussex Energy firm iGas. Fracking involves drilling underground and then pumping in pressurised water to crack the rocks and release trapped pockets of oil or gas. The controversial technique has been linked to earthquakes and other environmental problems." Excuse me. The campaign to protect rural England warned Hampshire residents earlier this year that protecting national parks from the technique could force energy firms to move into the centre of the county. And there are two pictures with this article, one of Chris Gillam and the other of a group of protesters with placards.
Ping pong tournament. The Winchester Primary School's Table Tennis League returned this month with six teams each with four players from five different schools competing to be crowned league champions. Winnell, Hairstock, South Wanston, Weston and St Bede schools are battling it out nearly every Friday this term in the Westgate School Gymnasium. The event is being run by South Wanston Table Tennis Club with help from Winchester Table Tennis League and Winchester City Council. The project aims to introduce table tennis to a new generation of players. Most of the youngsters had little or no experience of the game before the competition began. Head coach Paddy Shepherd said last season's primary school league proved very successful. A number of children joined South Wanston Table Tennis Club afterwards and were coached regularly, improving so much that a few of them are now playing in the Winchester League itself. Last Friday, the competition was visited by the Mayor, Councillor Angela Clear, and there's a lovely picture of her standing in with all the competitors. Each school has got a different coloured T-shirt on, and they all look very good with their bats in their hand. There are just two girls and rather a lot of boys. I'm sure the girls could come up as well.
A tiny bit to finish with, perhaps. And it's called Ban from Driving. A Winchester man convicted of dangerous driving and failing to stop has had his sentence dismissed. Michael Nutley, 26, of Wavell Way, Stanmore, was convicted at Basingstoke Magistrates Court in July. But the case was recalled, and Nutley's conviction was set aside. The reprieve was short-lived. Instead, he admitted driving dangerously and was disqualified from driving for 20 months.
And that is the end of the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editor, Tom Williams. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Bye-bye.
And Maria Head.
Bye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye. And do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord is in fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.